How do you do? I'm Irv Kupcinet, the moderator of Kup's Show, the talk of television. Our uninhibited guests today include Maya Angelou, the author, singer Robert Goulet, movie maker Russ Meyer, Jane Birkin, the actress-singer, movie director Billy Friedkin, and TV star Bob Crane. Jane, I'd like to ask you a question based on your expressed lifestyle. Are you a fan of your fellow Britisher, Julie Christie?
Lifestyle, in that she's not married, Larry?
She's not married, and she makes no bones of the fact. In fact, she flouts the fact that she lives with somebody, whoever she's in love with.
Yes, I am, but I'm more limited in that I was married, and I tried that. And whilst I was, you know, I have a baby, daughter. And
when you were married?
Yes. And now I'm divorced a year ago, and since that year I've been living with Serge, not quite the whole year, but I mean, you know,
Serge.
We've been living in Gainsborough, who wrote the lyrics and the music and sings with me on Je T'aime.
Well-known composer.
Yes.
In France. But I mean, that's... I think that's... I see it's exactly the same as if we were married. He's the only person I've ever lived with apart from being married. So I don't think that everybody says, you know, because it's rather easy to attack us, especially
yes.
as he's twice my age. You know, they you can set up a good sort of scandalous thing. I don't feel scandalous. I think there's a lot more people of my age who sort of have been around with more than two people in their life. I don't know. I feel very faithful. Is he married?
Yes.
Was and isn't anymore, and both of us are afraid to do it again.
Why? I mean, I know you're deeply in love with him, you've told me that, and you have a great mutual respect for each other. Why do you shy away from the actual marriage vow?
I suppose because it didn't work once, and I'm afraid that the same thing will happen again, the same whatever tiny thing goes away. I don't know what it is, but I'm afraid to risk it, if you see what I mean. I mean, sometimes I think, oh, I'd like to rush off and do it now, because the actual thing of getting married is marvellous. I want to do all I can the most, so why stop short of marriage? And then you think perhaps the day after I would regret it, so let's not do it until we're both sure.
Many young people today are finding the same sort of philosophy, adopting the same sort of philosophy,
and
they are madly in love, they have a true love.
Exactly, and it doesn't mean you're sort of loose and whip into bed with everybody, because, I mean, it's nothing to do with that.
No.
It's the fact that you're faithful to one person, and in a way it makes you even more venomously sort of strong with them, because you've got such a strong thing, and you haven't got the tie that keeps you together legally.
What's the beneficial result?
It cuts the divorce rate.
That's true.
Yeah. There's one
An
problem.
I
think there's one problem.
I came back to play straight.
Yeah, thank you.
And that is, I mean, I share Jane's feelings, but...
With Jane or with some other person?
Well, I'd like to share Jane with Serge, but that's another program.
So would I,
right.
Bill.
Or maybe...
She is very attractive.
I'm crazy about
we
Serge.
Made that point.
Well, the point I'd like to...
I don't even know him.
Serge. The point I'd like to make, though, is that... You see, it only gets publicized when people in the public eye do this, like Mick Jagger or Vanessa Redgrave or Jane and Serge. And I think there's one danger.
Or Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow. The one danger in sort of publicizing this lifestyle or concept is that young people who cannot afford to take care of the consequences of a relationship in which they're not married but may have children... Young people, I think, are encouraged to do this. So, I mean, I think it's perfectly great that this is done, if people believe it. But I think one has to be very careful about saying that everything's great and it's working fine.
Why do you think it's perfectly great? I don't quite get the advantage if they're madly in love, and I said they are, if they don't get married. What's the purpose of not getting married?
I don't believe in marriage. Well, I don't think... I mean, that's a piece of paper.
For parents?
And it's... For myself.
No, for parents.
No, for myself.
No, but I'm talking about a child is born.
That's right, there's responsibility.
That's the big hang-up. Everything else, great, you're saying. That's fine.
No,
now she's pregnant. What do you do now?
That's not what I've said, Bob.
No, but it's what I'm saying. I'm asking. I'm setting up the most logical big problem. What Cup says...
If you're a normal human being, you run.
This is what you do. You do have a responsibility if you have a child. Whether you're married or not, you have a responsibility to the child. Yes, I believe that. But, I mean... there's so much hypocrisy in so many areas today that I think it's wrong to condemn people who don't have a marriage license, who live together and who love each other.
I think I would like to say something too. I think it has been proven in these days that the institutionalized ceremonies have very little validity. We see the young people today who are the children of people who were married.
Yes.
And we see them today. And I don't think they are any the better for their fathers and mothers having been legitimately
together. Exactly. The most
together.
Important thing is the so father stays with the baby. My baby's father didn't stay with the baby, and we were married.
I think
so
that's the fault of human beings, yes. Whether they're married or not married. It's more of a marriage
institution. It's important for the baby to have a father that stays with her, him, and two people that love each other, and that the child feels that there's love around. And my child feels there's more love around now, because there is, than before when there wasn't. She doesn't have a father now. She's got Serge, she has got one. But, I mean, the fact of whether one's legally married or not, the important thing is that you're together. And the child feels a thing of being loved and together.
What Bob was saying, I think, though, is that you're going to bring as much love to the child. And you're going to help him to learn to live life. But when he goes out into the world and somebody says, are your parents married? The little kids are very cruel. My parents are not married, and it's going to hurt him that way.
It's a changing world, though, Bob.
I know it's a changing world, but maybe not for the kids.
I mean,
you know?
There was a time, the kids that are growing up today are going to find, for example, that the abortion laws will have been changed by the time they grow up. All things are being much more liberalized, for good or bad.
Yeah.
It's changing. It's no people who don't love each other, but who live together because of a marriage license.
Ridiculous.
I'm not given any more respect than two people who love each other and are not married.
Well, they're given more respect, but they don't give as much. They haven't
yes.
as much to give. I think it's interesting too that the word that can't be used on television that used to indicate a person who was a child of an illegitimate union no longer means that same thing. So young people today don't even know what that word really comes from.
I'd like to ask the problem of rearing illegitimate children has been raised on this program. Maya, I think I can turn to you as an authority because you tell in your book about having an illegitimate child, one of the travails of your life, which you describe so brilliantly in your book. How did you tackle this problem?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a travail. It was my great experience. My son was born to me when I was 16. And the black American, I've tried to say in the book that we are an inner city, an inner culture within a larger outer culture. And we have different sets of morals, you know. In many cases, when you see the pugilist with his pink Cadillac and the pimp or the numbers man with his numbers, he is a respected man in the black society. Oft times, I don't say all of them, I don't say those that exploit and
they're making it in a white society.
That's right. And knowing that this man cannot operate freely according to his mental machine, according to his ability, the black community says, oh, you're still making it. You're on the case. You're right in there. You're laying in the cut. Good. You see? Now, when black women do not agree with the concept of abortion. So black women have children. They keep them. They love them. They go to work. And years ago, they'd go to work in some white woman's kitchen, mop the floor, scrub the floor, do this, and have 5 children, 6, 8, 10, and try to give them education to the extent. And a little known fact in the United States is that we graduate more people out of the universities, black colleges and universities and northern universities, than the whole graduating, matriculating population of Great Britain annually. That's a fantastic little piece of information.
It sure is.
And those women and men put those children through school being janitors. You know, now the tragedy has been that once you get your B.A. in liberal arts, what the heck can you do with it? So you get a job as an elevator operator, you know, and you speak marvelous English. One of the great historians of the late 1800s, a black man, says that when he took his liberal arts degree, he had to study Greek and Latin. And he went to school, he went to Harvard, with a white boy. They were roommates, and the white boy came from Kansas. He had studied agriculture. The white boy's father owned a small farm in Kansas. He went back to Kansas and developed that farm into a big money-making concern. The black boy said he went home, stood over his mother, who had been, you know, washing clothes on those old scrub boards, and recited Homer to her. You know, that was the best he could do. But with my son, I'm very proud. I have a son who's gorgeous and lovely and marvelous and my joy. He's 24 years old. He's been the first black executive for Western Airlines. He's now bought a Land Rover. He's just finished doing the Sahara, and he's in Malaga, Spain. He's going to be the first American and first black man to drive the ice roads from Leningrad to Vladivostok. That's right. Fantastic person.
Would you mind telling us how this child was conceived? Because that, too, is a fascinating part of your book.
Well, it's youth. I tried to deal with youth. I've written a book about the human condition. And I was at 15, I was almost 6 foot. It's difficult at best to grow up. I mean, I think that most people don't survive their youth. I think that's why one sees old boys and old girls, very few men and very few women. I think if you're white in a white country, rich in a country where money is adored, beautiful according to the standards of that country, it's still difficult to grow up. So if you happen to be black in a white country, poor in a rich country, ugly according to the standards of that country, and still try, it's difficult. One of my hangs, beyond just the problem of youth, and the terrors that stalk at night and go bump in the day, was the fact that I was so tall. And then I had a heavy voice, and my breasts weren't doing the things other girls were doing. I had little knobs. I looked like a cucumber mostly, you know? And I thought, I was a voracious reader, and I thought, I'm becoming a lesbian. That's it. Now, I read The Well of Loneliness about 3 or 4 times, and I felt so sorry for those besmirched, poor old hermaphrodites. You know, that's what I thought they were. Well, I understood the finished lesbian, but I didn't know how they came about. You know, I didn't know if I was a budding one. So I thought, what I've got to do is have sex. I must do it. And I was an intellectual. I was going to college at night and high school in the day. I had been the first woman on the streetcars, conductor on the streetcars of San Francisco. I was out to lunch. I was speaking languages and things. And all the guys were about this big. You know? And I was, they call me Mama Chief, how tall, and, you know, all the things. Like, how do you feel? The guys used to say, I'm standing in a hole. You know, all the dumb wonderful things. So I approached a man up the street. I told it.
Yes.
He says, he used to pass me, because I was so severe and dignified, he used to pass me and say, hey, Maya, what are you going to do? And I'd say, I beg your pardon. I weighed about 110 pounds and was almost 6 foot. I don't know why, how I ever talked him into it. But I but I finally said something like that. He came down the street one night, and I didn't have to go to school that night, and had I didn't have to be home until 11. So I saw him, and I said, "Hey," he said, "Hey, Ma," and he started into his old thing. And I said, "Hey, do you still want to have a sexual intercourse with me?" And he said, "Ma," I said, "Take me someplace. Let's go." So help me God. And after, I thought, "You mean that's all?"
Is that all there is?
That's all there is to it? Good Lord, where's all the violins? And, I remember that Veronica Lake, you know, in the movies, was ready to sell out the whole free world.
That's the difference, Maya, between sex and love.
That's right.
What line are you on? What streetcar line are you on?
Desire. Market.
line?
No, I was on the 5. That was the McAllister.
Well, don't get sidetracked on your streetcar. Tell us what happened after you had this relationship. And
well, 3 weeks later, we walked out, and my family were pretty well-to-do. And we walked out of the place where we were, and he said, we'll take a streetcar home. I said, oh, no, why are you kidding? I'll take a taxi. And then he said, I suppose he made some night. I can't remember what he said, but I know that 3 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant. And then I didn't know what to do. And then I told my brother, who was my ace and my big brother, my only brother, my protection. And he said, don't tell mother because she'll take you out of school. See, I had gotten a scholarship at 14 to go to college at night, but I still hadn't finished high school. So I just, I went to school until, it just sounds unbelievable, but I went to school until 3 weeks before Guy was born. And he was born the day after V-Day. I graduated from summer school. And V-Day was something like August 16th, 1945.
V-Day.
Yeah, V-E-Day, right. And it was my father's birthday, and they were so proud. And my father used to say I was growing buxom and hippie and all that. And my hair was getting long and rich looking. And he used to say, baby, you're really growing into a fine woman. I used to think I should. I'm 6 months pregnant.
What did your friend think during this whole thing?
My friend? He wasn't my friend. The man up the street?
Well, your cohort.
He made an observation. I spoke to him once when my son was about four, when I was about 4 months pregnant, and I explained to him what was happening, that I had to go to school, and, you know, I needed somebody to talk to. And he took the position that I would ask him for some support.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how arrogant I used to be. I explained to him that I had made more, I mean, my allowance was greater than his salary, you know. Mm-hmm. So, please, but I was lonely, and I wanted just to somebody who knew that to say today was horrible, you know, but I couldn't. And one copes. And I've written the book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, to say you can win. I believe there are two kinds of people in the world. There are winners and losers. And it's a concept. You join winning. You join the concept.
I love the premium.
Jane, that's a very dramatic story that Maya told us. Are you facing the possibility of having a child with your lover to whom you are not married?
Well, we disagree slightly over it in that I think that it would be all right. And he doesn't think it's all right without being married. And I think it is all right, because there's also, I've got
He's
one
more
child.
He's old-fashioned than you.
Yes, in a strange way, no. But I feel that I've already got a child, and therefore that it doesn't...
You have one child by your first marriage, yes.
And I don't think that it... I think it would be marvelous to have another one, apart from the fact that I love being pregnant. Always, for a year before, I used to put cushions under my skirt. With my husband, used to bore him to death because it wasn't very pretty. And, you know, I've always wanted to be pregnant, so I just love it anyhow. It's so exciting. And so I'm always longing to get pregnant. But
well, why don't you marry somebody else and then he could, you know.
A keenness over
how
there.
Old are you, Jane?
What?
How old are you?
I'm 22.
22? You have some wonderful instincts for motherhood. It's wonderful. Bill, when you listen to Maya talk about her fear of being a lesbian, certainly that must have brought back something to you about boys in the band.
I've never feared being a lesbian.
No, you didn't. But you dealt with some...
Well, that's the moral I get from Maya's story. Sometimes it's simpler to become a lesbian. If that's what you... If you really dig it. If you really believe
well,
it.
Well, if I was. I'm a very independent person. And I like who I've come to be.
Right.
If I was, I would join that. I agree with the English... with the British law about consenting adults. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. If I was, that would be no... I think what I was trying to deal with, I was not. It was just that people do not remember what it's like to be young. And once we become 25 or 30, we forget the reality. When a child says, don't turn out the light because a lion is going to come in here, he's not kidding. I mean, and I am a poet. I've tried to say in this book how real. I've tried to really get the smells, the sounds, the tastes of childhood. I'm talking about the human condition, you know? Nobody seems, I mean, people don't tend to respect. They tend to condescend or they're unkind. But just to understand, that's true. There really is a lion coming here, if you believe it.
Sure. Yes, it's terrifying. You know? And also to grow up, especially if you feel it's not growing up quite... I was in boarding school, and that's a tremendously cruel place because you've got all girls of the same age. And in my dormitory, everybody had enormous great bosoms. And so I used to sit there in the bath and used to poke their head over the screens and say, how's it coming along, Jane? Anything coming up yet? And I used to hide with flannels and soap and everything.
Somebody told me.
And I was told, I tried everything. Somebody told me toothpaste helped. But it sounds silly now, but I was desperate. I tried everything. I tried. It didn't do anything. But they said it did.
Where did you put
it? I put Signal toothpaste. And then a matron came and said, "Jane Birkin, what is all this peppermint smell in your bed?" I said, and she had red and white stripes all over. I used Signal. It was obviously the wrong brand. And you try anything.
You develop any cavities?
Not a single one.
That's
good. So it just shows you do get desperate. And it sounds funny.
And moral lesbianism and homosexuality is bred in those British schools where they send boys and girls off together to go to their school.
Very possibly, but also now with I don't know. My brother went to one of those.
More people admitted that all of us. You see, this is what I'm talking about. All of us either really forget or blank out that period. And how can we talk about how terrible the generation gap is if we don't admit what it was like for us? Most people had those terrors. Men, boys, had the terror of what is a homosexual. I mean, guys who had no tendency toward it at all. Girls had that fear and other fears. And they are very real. That's all I'm trying to say.
I started to ask Bill about that because he made a picture called The Boys in the Band, which deals with homosexuality in one of the most sophisticated manners I've ever seen. I saw the stage play. I haven't seen your movie yet, Bill, but I certainly shall. Hmm. But I was going to ask you a moment ago, didn't Mayer's story kind of ring a bell with you, dealing with the homosexuals?
Yes, it was very
similar
moving.
Problem. That,
very moving.
And that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. We have to say goodbye to Robert Goulet, Maya Angelou, Russ Meyer, Bob Crane, Jane Birkin, and Billy Friedkin. We'll be back tomorrow on Cup Show with a whole new panel of stars for you.